Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, geeks of all ages, welcome to another fun and festive episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. I'm Justin Cavender, and with me as always, unless he goes on vacation like he always does, now that I think about it, is Dave Edmondson. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Fabulous. Randy can't join us tonight, so we have scoured the internet for a volunteer, and wouldn't you know it, Mr. Will Ray has joined us. How you doing, Will?
It's an honor. Thanks, guys.
Ooh. Thank you for responding to the ad at the truck stop bathroom down the way. Really appreciate that.
Well, I see a hole in the wall, and I just have to take a peek.
I like it.
Half the time it's penis, but the other half the time it's Geek Legacy invites.
Yes. That's how we do things. Speaking of truck stops and traveling, how about Game of Thrones? What are we at? Episode 5? Season 7, Episode 5? Where everyone's just traveling all over Westeros over the course of like 8 seconds? David, what are your thoughts?
I know we'll dissect it a little bit better, but I just want to give a shout-out to the MVP of this season so far, the animators that are animating Drogon the Dragon, because when he was perched up on that hill, when Dany was trying to like threaten people to bend the knee, looked so awesome. And then when Jon Snow had his little moment with Drogon, like the dragon, like I've never seen dragons look so good as they are in this show, and they're doing it on a TV show budget. So I almost am glad they did 7 episodes instead of 10 episodes, kept the same budget, just put it into stuff. And next week's episode has like 1/3 the total budget of the season, so it should be amazing.
Oh, there you go. Will, what were your initial takeaways from this week's episode?
It's mixed bag for me. I had a lot of really amazing moments, but then I also felt so frustrated in some of the reveals they gave that I felt were kind of lackluster.
Are you talking about Gilly?
Forced, yeah, just like force. What's an annulment?
Oh.
It says
I'm like, this is like the single most important bit of information in the entire series. And Gilly is the one who ever discovers it? Yeah. Oh my god, I'm with you on that one, Will.
And the fat isn't even like listening to her. He's like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I'm just writing down shit and getting frustrated.
Yeah, Gilly has single-handedly ruined all of knowledge for Sam.
There's 5,116 steps. Oh, and by the way, Jon Snow's parents were actually married. He's not a bastard.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I cannot believe they gave that to Gilly.
I know. That is nuts. It was painful. I agree 100%.
And maybe easily as painful for me, I was thinking Littlefinger scenes. I was excited to see him come back in the play and kind of outsmart somebody. He actually has somebody on the table that doesn't know all of his moves, with Arya thinking a little overconfidently. But at the same time, I was almost, I don't know, cringing at Arya's kind of forced conflict creation.
Yeah.
With her sister.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. They kind of have really thrown that on us real fast. I mean, we always knew they didn't get along too well, but their reunion was so short-lived, and they put this conflict on them so fast. I have to imagine they're going to resolve it just as fast. I'm sure there will be a confrontation. You know, Sansa will make rational points like, well, Joffrey was going to kill me if I didn't write this. And then they'll fight, and they'll realize Littlefinger's behind it, and Arya will just slit Littlefinger's throat.
Yeah, it's going to be like in a snap.
Yeah.
I hope she murders Sansa and then wears her face and then has the intercourse with Littlefinger and then does a reveal and takes off her face. And then he's like, oh, I'm banging the wrong Stark girl. And then she slits his throat.
Double face.
It's going to be like a Gone Girl
yeah,
assassination.
Totally. That might be a bit much.
That would be a much for Arya's first sex scene.
Yeah.
I'm in for Sansa being killed. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Oh.
That I don't have a problem with.
But she likes being Lady of Winterfell.
That's fine. She can say. Out of all the characters in the entire show, with the exception of Gilly and the Fat, I'd have to say Sansa is probably my least favorite Game of Thrones major character.
Sure, that's fair. All right, What else happened in this lovely episode? How about... Oh, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, we had this, what should have been this great, amazing scene between Tyrion and Jaime, but it looked like they were, like, green screened. Like I didn't feel like they were in the same room.
Right, they were Skyping in. Just,
like, yeah, they were, like, so distant, and I get it, there was going to be some contention between the two of them, but I really wanted to kind of more an emotional payoff, because last episode we really saw that Tyrion was very, very upset that Jaime may die. Mm-hmm. And I thought that mm-hmm. more of that would have come across in their interaction. I mean, I guess it has been however many weeks they skipped while they rode the boat with Davos. That's another thing. Why didn't Jaime and them, or why didn't Tyrion and Dany go get Jaime out of the lake? And, like, did they think he drowned? Obviously not, because Tyrion was arranging a meeting with him, so he obviously knew he was alive.
She might not have even known that was Jaime. It's not like she's seen photographs of the man. They don't have wanted posters at the post office, David.
That's true. It could have been a soldier.
Yeah.
He was Tyrion saw it, though.
Yeah, well, he knew what he was looking for. She was just... She was concerned about her dragon's little wing and giant arrows.
But so you think
I see your point, David, though, about... It, more an emotional impact on that scene between Jaime and Tyrion, because that was right on the heels of Jaime figuring out that it wasn't, it was Olenna that killed Joffrey.
Right.
And so there was a huge, you know, guilt removed from Tyrion.
Absolutely. And then I don't understand why Jaime's so mad about his dad when he is flat out telling him, look, he knew I was innocent and he's trying to kill me anyway. And he's always hated me. And Jaime's always found love in his heart for Tyrion. So that was a little weird.
Yeah, but Bronn saved the day. Saved our good buddy Jaime. I know Justin has. I don't know what you're. Have you read the books, Will? Are you?
Yes.
Are you okay? Perfect. So me I believe Justin is. I think we want Jaime to be a badass again, and I don't think he's gonna be. I think he's gonna be this broken cripple for the rest of the show. I think it's gonna get worse. Like, he's just gonna get beat down and. I'm fine. I really like Jaime as a character, and I could see that being an interesting story. But do you think, Justin or Will, either one, that we're going to get a return of badass Jaime? Like, he's been, like, faking it, or he's going to learn something? Or do you think this is the Jaime we're going to have going forward?
He has one more redemption plotline in store, I think, with this reveal of a baby. I think that's going to be a complete red herring for him, and it's going to all blow up as, like, the final straw against him and his sister.
And Maggie the Frog said she'd have 3 kids. She didn't say she'd have 4 kids.
Yeah.
It's not going to make it outside of her.
Yeah.
Assuming there is pregnant. A child, yeah. It could get very soap opery very quickly if it's a faked pregnancy. That would be weird. I do think that he had a pretty sweet moment where he just sort of just threw fear aside and grabbed a spear and was going to try and end the war right then and there in the previous episode.
Huge.
Yeah, that was a pretty big moment. I don't know if it gets much crazier than that when you're just looking death right in the face in the form of a dragon and just riding straight to it, ready to see what happens. That was pretty brave of him.
And clearly that was to kill Dany, not Drogon.
Yes, he was interested in the girl.
I've heard that said the other way, and there's no way that was possible.
Yeah.
That was possible.
Yeah, no. This is definitely a kill the lady and... That'd be the
King,
end of it.
Queenslayer, yeah.
Yeah.
I did find it satisfying, like I talked about earlier, the Drogon-Jon Snow interaction. Like, we know, I mean, we mostly know that he's a Targaryen, but I think this is a way of Dany to kind of see that she can trust him a little bit. And for me, that scene emotionally paid off in a way that I wanted other scenes to that didn't. Did it work for you? Are you guys a fan of, A, how Drogon is... pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And just the overall, like, emotionality of the scene has made a
yes
point.
Absolutely. And I think that did translate well with her. And when he said that he was going to leave, she didn't want him to go. She's like, you know, I don't give you permission. And when he says, well, with all due respect, I don't need your permission, she got a little wet
that
in
was
her
a...
drawers at that moment.
Yep.
I was picturing...
You can see,
like,
her eyelid twitch a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I was literally picturing, like, when you're trying to squeeze a bottle of ketchup and just not enough's coming out, and it just sort of makes that sound. And we didn't quite get that, but that's what I was picturing. I was like, oh, yeah, this is happening. And
that's all I keyed in on the Danny scenes as well.
Cue the music. This is going to happen. They're about to get naughty.
Like, so. I'm going to have sex with my nephew.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's part was so frustrating with the Drogon scene. I was just completely watching Dany and her kind of puzzled look at how well Jon was interacting with this dragon he's never seen before up close. But I don't know why we have to still, like, slowly pull this Band-Aid off of Jon Snow is a Targaryen for everybody in the show. I mean, obviously the fans are well aware at this point that there's an abundance of, you know, clues they're throwing at us with Gilly, for example, again.
Yeah.
Right. They slow play.
I don't know why we can't just, like, pull that Band-Aid off.
Yeah, they're slow playing at a Dragonstone where it matters, but then, like, Gilly gets, what's an annulment? And you know it's going to come out something like that. Like, they're going to make it to Dragonstone, or they're going to make it to Eastwatch or whatever, and someone's going to mention, like, Rhaegar Targaryen. Oh, I read about Aegon Targaryen. Did you know that he got annulled?
It's going to be another Gilly callback again.
Yep.
But, oh my god!
It's gonna be the kid that doesn't age is gonna, like, knock the book off of the cart to the page for Sam to find or something.
Because it makes Jon Snow, like, the rightful king of Westeros. Like, I mean, like, he would
best
be he has the better claim than Dany because of his father. And I don't know how Dany's gonna take that, because, you know, Jon Snow does not want to be king. And, you know, the whole thing from the beginning of Song of Ice and Fire is, you know, everyone thought that Jon Snow was ice and Dany was fire, but Jon Snow's both. Jon Snow is ice and fire. He doesn't
need. You don't need Dany anymore.
Yeah. I mean, just like whatever the other Targaryen in the books are, whose name I can never remember, but we got Jon Snow. That's all we got. Dany can go fuck a tree or something.
I just remember Viserys and Rhaegar. Those are the only other Targaryens I know. Oh, and then in the book there was that little boy. Yeah.
The baby that was
that was supposedly murdered. Yeah, I forgot all about that. I'm glad the show has totally forgotten about that.
Because then we had more Dorne plot lines, and that was that much more excruciating.
Oh,
that's a big pass. Yeah, totally forgot about the baby.
Yeah, who may or may not actually be a Targaryen.
Yeah, and he's, like, knocking down the doors of King's Landing in the last book. He's like, "Hey, I'm here."
Yeah, he's got an army, and he's already taken over, like, several castles.
Yeah.
And Dany's still in Meereen in the books.
Yeah, she was taken off by her dragon. Remember, she was out in the middle of the fucking desert.
With a Dothraki still?
Yeah. She had just taken flight with him when all that was going down.
Yeah, the Battle of Slaver's Bay had just begun, and she drove off. She rode off.
Yeah, she's like, fuck this shit. Oh, my God. And then our buddy, Sir Bartizan Selmy, he's like fucking Batman saving the day, and then he gets killed in an alley in the show. They totally changed it. Yeah, totally forgot about the little baby Targaryen. Oh my god, that's nuts. I would say I'd reread the books, but I don't want to.
Yeah,
no.
I mean, you're almost gonna have to, like, because when book 6 comes out, you're gonna be so confused.
Yeah,
too many plot lines.
I can't read those fourth. I can't read Feast of Crows and Dance of Dragons again. I could read 1, 2, and 3 without hesitation. Mm-hmm. But 4 and 5 were rough.
Yeah, I agree.
I might still want to reread them in order to not have to keep watching Jorah be friend zoned and all of his, like, 1980s movie looks between Daenerys and Jon that he's catching.
Yeah,
was like, the side. That's all right. I think that scene with Tyrion giving him the coin means that Jorah is not long for this world.
Yeah, no kidding. And then, go ahead.
Suspected survival from this trip up north?
Oh, man. I think it's going to be tight. I'm hoping.
Murderfest.
Yeah, so I think Gendry. So, speaking of which, Gendry is back on the show. Everyone's been wondering about him since season 3, season 4?
3.
And so. And he's got a hammer like his old man used to, which is kind of cool. Remember, Robert Baratheon beat Rhaegar Targaryen with his hammer on the trident, so that's kind of fitting that he's wielding that bad boy. And
yeah, they weren't kidding about the seed is strong. It's like every personality quirk,
right,
without knowing the man at all, is coming through in Gendry.
Is there a way to test your strength of your seed prior to it becoming a person?
Yeah.
Taste test.
But he's even like a like a strong-willed pain in the ass, like his old man. Like he's like, I'm a Gendry Baratheon's, Robert Baratheon's bastard. We weren't supposed to tell him that.
Yeah, they become they become best friends like in a second.
And Jon's just as pensive in that interaction as Ned Stark would have been to a brashful Baratheon, younger Robert.
Absolutely.
But well, Davos. I really like Davos' character.
He's the best.
Like, he had one of my favorite lines in the episode. It's like, nothing fucks you like time.
Yeah.
And he was trying to get the gold cloaks to have like the fermented crab. He's like, now get to your favorite establishment before you whittle a hole in your chainmail.
Yeah. Fantastic.
And then when they're all going out to fight, he's like, I would be a liability to you guys out there. And Tormund's like, yeah, you would.
Yeah. And then what about how Tormund wanted, he was hoping that Brienne. Yeah. Fantastic.
All of his lines were comic gold for Tormund. Yeah. Short scene.
I really like Tormund. I have a feeling that he's an easy casualty, but I don't want him to be.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking more along the lines of when it's all said and done, when the dust settles, I think he's going to be right by Jon's side at the very end.
Yeah, I think Thoros is done for. I think Dondarrion, I think that he's going to light a sword, he's going to get killed, and that Jon Snow will become the prince that is promised. I want the Hound to survive, because I like the Hound.
Agreed.
Too.
Bastard.
I would love for, like I said, I would love for Tormund to survive, because I was watching some old scenes with Tormund, and like he came from a pretty bad place, but he's quickly become like this endearing character. And I really want him and Brienne to get together. I want them both to make it and be happy at the end, but, mm-hmm. But we'll see.
And on the note of the Hound, the very idea that they need to take White Walker back to King's Landing can put him back in King's Landing, you know, for the Clegane Bowl that everyone's been hoping for.
There we go. That's what I meant, Clegane Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is now even more so a possibility.
So they've definitely shown Dondarrion's resurrection previously. The Hound had his fight with him. Do you think that they'll give him one last resurrection, but it'll be kind of a Lady Stoneheart passing his life probably to the Hound?
I don't know. I think that at some point they'll get separated. I think the Thoros will go down, so there's not even like the possibility of resurrection. And I think Dondarrion will see Thoros go down and be like, well, this is it, boys. And that's where the scene where you see where he has Lightbringer and he'll just be hacking away. And then I still think that at some point we will get some dragons coming to save the day and that one of them will not return back home with Dany.
Oh.
And that he will get raised as an ice dragon.
There's got to be some way to balance the dragons, right?
Yeah, the Night King just like does that thing like at Hartholm where he raises his hands and all of a sudden the dragon's like eye opens and it's blue or something. I'm like, oh. I mean,
they haven't shown anything that the Whites and the White Walkers have to take down anything in the air. They're just a mob of landlubbers.
Yeah, like World War Z landlubbers.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll get a Deus Ex Benjen out of nowhere. Of course.
Oh yeah, I bet
his loop
shows up.
Needs to be closed.
Yeah,
I bet they do because in the books he saves Bran by giving him his horse and letting him flee. I bet they do that with Jon.
And there is no horse in the walking out of the wall scene.
Ah,
at least what they showed.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I bet that everyone's fleeing. Something happens. Jon gets left behind. All hope looks like it's lost. Benjen comes in with his horse, gives Jon Snow the horse, and then he's overrun by Whites.
What if it's just one of those horses where you put a quarter in and it just kind of shakes back and forth?
I'm like, damn you, Benjen!
I think it's pretty clear that this whole plan is not going to work out the way they want, but maybe the horse will end up being the example, because it was also, I believe.
Oh yeah,
undead.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet they capture one. My hope is that they capture one.
And he's just riding bitch on the back of the horse.
Yeah. Like with his arms around like Jon Snow, like the back of a motorcycle.
He could be Lucky Pierre and Tormund be behind them. It could be like a three way on the horse.
And I want them to bring it to King's Landing, and I want the final episode of season 7 to be like some big gathering spot where all sides are present, and it's almost like a meeting of, we're all going to kill each other afterwards, but right now we need to do this. And I like that idea because that means my girl Cersei lives throughout this season.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, we have 2 episodes left. In 2 weeks, we are literally done with Game of Thrones for at least a year, probably more. And that's just heartbreaking.
I've heard rumor about potential movie-style releases of the last season and being 6 episodes, maybe even closer to the 2-hour mark.
They had mentioned like 90 minutes to like 100-minute episodes, but only having 6 of them. But that's
fine. Yeah, I'm okay with that. As long as it's not like 3 and 3 and they go an even additional season, that would make me mad. Like totally Sopranos that shit and just drag it out longer than it needs to be.
Well, I think they're anxious to end this chapter of Game of Thrones because, you know, they're going to open it up with the other series of Game of Thrones, and they still have that. They have Westworld that was a big hit, and they're looking to expand that. So I think that as far as their hour-long drama quota, I think they're pretty full, and I think they want Game of Thrones to end so they can get that big finale push, like, oh my god, HBO is the greatest, they have Game of Thrones, the best show ever. And I don't think they want to put a bad taste in the people's mouth by splitting it up.
It's possible.
So out of the major characters, like POV characters from the book, what's the most likely person to die, Will, in this season?
I think Littlefinger's plot is going to backfire way too hard in the North.
Oh.
When you have an assassin right there, I feel like it's going to blow up on him, and he'll be the finale death, potentially.
Sure, that's a good one. I mean, he had that finale death with Lady Liza when he threw her ass out the moon door, which is probably not only one of the greatest moments in, like, literary history, but also on television.
Only her son was still suckling at her breast when she went over. let him fly, kid.
Yeah, that kid. Maybe he'll end up on the Iron Throne when it's all said and done.
Oh my god.
I definitely agree with you, David. I think Cersei can make it through the season.
Yeah.
Yes.
She's safe.
And she's only got 6 more to go. Come on, Cersei, you can do it.
Yeah.
Who's your most likely death?
Oh, I really like the idea that you said a little finger. I see him probably going, but just to be different. Well, I think Jaime's going to kill Cersei, so I don't think he'll die. But they've kind of been building him up to be so vulnerable. I don't know.
You can go exact opposite and say a Stark. Like,
I know. I think that's just it. I think that Littlefinger is going to get the better of a Stark, and I think that we will see another Stark die before Littlefinger does.
Well, it definitely won't be Sansa, and it won't be Bran.
It could be Arya.
It won't be Arya, and it won't be Bran, so it'd have to be Sansa.
Mm-hmm.
Arya and Bran have too much to do still, and Mr. Martin's original plan for Game of Thrones had 5 people living at the end, and Arya and Bran were both on that list.
Oh, really?
Oh, wow.
Shit could change. I mean, there's no saying that they couldn't. Other things from his original thing had changed. But I think that Bran definitely has stuff to do, so they can't get rid of Bran, unfortunately.
I want
to
wheel that guy off the wall, man.
Wait, stop. Don't do that to me. I have information. Please, I don't want to die.
These aren't the ravens you're looking for.
Yeah, right.
It was pretty cool when he said the ravens, and then the Night King just like looked at him and they went up. Peace out.
I don't get why they were flying so low, though. That was kind of weird.
Yeah, I was waiting for a white to catch one in his hand or something. They were right on him.
I have a bronze line of "Listen to me, cunt, until I get what I'm owed."
Yeah.
I'm owed. Dragon doesn't get to kill you. You don't get to kill you. Only I get to kill you.
He dropped the C word. It's pretty hardcore. But yeah, I don't know. I think we will get some pretty hardcore deaths in the next 2 weeks. Let's shake things up a bit. Leave us excited and wanting more.
I'm gonna caveat my little finger throw out there. If next episode doesn't have a lot more plays that really build him up, I don't think they're going to take him out without like a, in such a whimper of a way.
Yeah, I can see that. I like that. Changing gears, the whole Suicide Squad, like everyone on that squad hates each other.
Right.
Like they were all like, "You're a Mormont? Yeah, Dad killed all my friends," and you know, and they're like, "Oh," and then Gendry's pissed at the Brother Without Banners because they sold him to Melisandre. Yeah, it's a good little gathering of people who hate each other.
Makes it interesting.
Yeah, as long as Davos doesn't die, I think
Davos and Varys will probably outlive everybody.
Yeah, I hope so.
They're pretty clever. I wouldn't mind Varys and Littlefinger having another scene together. I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, one more battle of the wits.
Mm-hmm. Except Varys would win that, and then that would be bye-bye Littlefinger, and he's my dark horse. He's my car salesman, pedophile, superhero.
Maybe they can come together at this meeting that takes place in King's Landing with the White. Oh. W-I-G-H-T.
Yeah. No, our Doug is a White.
Yeah.
Alrighty then. Let's go ahead and move on. Game of Thrones. Wait. Right. Let's everyone give it a letter grade. What'd you think of this week's episode?
Yeah. B+.
There you go. It's that bad, right? Nothing happened.
Yeah, it was. No, I enjoy it. My favorite Game of Thrones stuff is, sure, I love Hardhome and the Battle of Blackwater and stuff like that, but at its best, Game of Thrones is like two people in a room talking. I mean, most of the time that person is Tyrion, but, you know, I love the moments like the Dany and Jon stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, would you give it, Justin?
Yeah, I'd give it a B+. I enjoyed it.
What about you, Will?
Yeah, I'd say I would almost have the A there ready in store for this episode, but I think Gilly pulled it down a half a grade.
See?
And it was the longest episode of the season.
Did we get much of the Maesters in this episode, or was that the one before?
No, that was this one. That was this one at the table, and they were just not buying into the Raven. They're like, what's a cripple know about White Walkers? Absolutely nothing.
That was all true to their frustratingness.
I mean, they have all of these books of the Long Night. You know, they have all of these books that they've been studying of the Night King, you know. They know that, well, they don't know, but I mean, half of their literature and half of their history is based around this character, the same person that came during a long winter, and they're the ones sending out the White Dove saying, winter has come, it's going to be the longest winter on recorded record. You would think that some of them would be able to put two and two together and at least entertain the idea.
They're all skeptical to a fault at this point.
Yeah. But, I mean, in the books, you kind of get the idea that, like, the Maesters of the Citadel are trying to, like, suppress the concept of magic. Because magic's bigger in the books than it is in the show. They've tried to make it a little more practical. But I guess they're just playing to that, like you were saying, Will, is that they're playing kind of how they do in the books, where they're like, they know... They probably know more than they're letting on, but they don't want to like make a panic or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it devalues them as the scientists of Westeros.
I hate the chains. They look like they're in a rap video with all those crazy chains. Stupid.
They got their bling.
Yeah.
All I do is win.
Yeah. Or in their case.
Yeah, I didn't see Maester Two Chains at the table.
Yeah. Two Chains.
There's a thing where he puts the chain on his thumb and like swings it.
There you go.
Twist it
around his head like a helicopter. Speaking of helicopters, Daniel Craig. He doesn't appear to be jumping out of any helicopters anytime soon. James Bond. We'll call it Bond 25, as it were. We hear talks of him gonna do Bond, not gonna do Bond, and now he's like, no decision has been made. Yes, but there's a lot of noise, but I have not decided. He says he's not holding out for more money. While that may be true, I would like to add, he has made a career out of complaining about being James Bond since the first movie. Ever since Casino Royale, he's always been like, oh, it's the worst, and oh, I got hurt doing this, and oh, I'm not going to do it ever again, and blah, blah, blah. And while I love Daniel Craig and I love his version of Bond, I am ready to move on.
Right. I think in this case, it's one of the few times when I actually side with Daniel Craig, just because the whole franchise is in flux right now. They don't have a director. They don't have a screenwriter. They don't have a script. They don't have a title. Right now they have nothing. And so they're trying to capitalize that Daniel Craig's coming back so that, you know, fans don't worry this property. But, you know, Barbara Broccoli's come out and said, you know, like movement on this project has all but stalled until they can find a director. And so as the face of James Bond, you know, it's wise for it would be silly for him to just be like, yeah, I'm 100% in, even though I know nothing about this movie. So I think it's smart that he is saying stuff like that. He probably wants to be Bond. He would be interested in portraying the character again. But I think he needs a little more info and not just jumping in blind, because who knows? They might hire Zack Snyder to do Bond 25.
Oh, that's your favorite. Well, I think they might have more luck landing the director if they say that Daniel Craig is on board. I think that
I think he's, for the most part, on board. He just doesn't want to fully commit in case they do something atrocious, like hire Zack Snyder.
Jesus. Do you like Zack Snyder, Will?
Ooh, yeah, there's quite a few movies I've enjoyed.
Yeah, do you like the 300?
Across the board.
300, Watchmen.
It's 300, all of that series is like a one-watch series for me. Like, I can't go back to them, but Watchmen I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I was watching Watchmen, it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I forgot that it's just, it's like a 10-hour movie, man. It doesn't end. But I like it. I was just like ready for it to be over 1,000 times. But and it's actually better than the comic. I will say that. I enjoy the ending to the movie more so than I do the ending to the comic book. Or graphic novel, I guess I should say. I don't want to offend.
That sounds like blasphemy.
Yeah. What's that guy? What's our buddy's name?
Alan Moore!
Oh my god, the grumpy goose of all grumpy gooses.
With his finger rings?
Yeah. He probably plays some sick-ass games of Dungeons & Dragons, too. Not better than us, but I'm sure it's amazing.
I guarantee you he dresses up like his character when he plays.
Oh, he might. I picture, like, sort of a dark cloak situation.
Oh, yeah. Maybe a sacrifice or two between the pizza and the plane.
Sounds about right.
Well, what do you think about this, Justin? Do you think that Craig should just jump on board so at least, you know, the fans and a future director would have someone to be like, oh, let's get this guy?
I would rather him just pass the torch and be done with it.
Idris Elba?
Just clean break?
Yeah, that'd be great. New direction, new Bond, completely new style, and just try and win over a new generation of moviegoers.
Is Idris Elba kind of in the pool of likely candidates?
Hey, his name always comes up because he's so goddamn charming and he's British. I mean, I would absolutely be on board for an Idris Elba as James Bond.
You'd be his Bond girl?
Ooh. Oh, I would be his Bond girl in a second.
I was kind of wondering with The Dark Tower being, you know, a lackluster release, but it sounds like his portrayal was still pretty inspired as far as what that character would look like, the kind of gunslinger. Mm-hmm. I was kind of wondering if that would be a nice transition roll into a espionage, you know, spy.
I think Idris
Elba is the least of that film's problems.
I'm telling you, man, anytime Westerns and science fiction come together, it doesn't work. No one cares. People might have interest in general, but there's never a real success story when it comes to cowboys and
no execution. Science.
Yeah. It's just
I mean, like, you got like Star Wars.
But it's not really. It's not cowboy.
There's not chaps. Leather chaps.
There are no chaps.
I mean, while like Han Solo has a gunslinger approach, he's not like an honest to goodness cowboy wearing a duster and a hat and fighting aliens. Like, you're cowboys and aliens. You're fucking. What's Serenity, the show that everyone... Firefly. If that was so good, why did it only last 11 episodes? You know what I mean? Like, it's not gonna put butts in the seats. It might be cool.
Ooh, you're starting to sound like me.
It's a fun idea on paper, but no one wants to watch it, let alone read it.
Agreed.
I read the first Stark Tower book in anticipation for this, and it is a hard book to get into. Like, it's like page one, it doesn't set up anything. Page one, you're just thrown into this world with the gunslinger, and they're talking about like geographical locations on this planet that doesn't exist in real life, and it's a confusing book. And the problem with the movie is they just couldn't decide. Like, they didn't embrace the fantastical elements of the movie. They never explain to you really why Matthew McConaughey wants this tower to be destroyed. They let you know that if the tower is destroyed, you know, our world is destroyed, but they don't say like, why does the Man in Black want that to happen? Why? What's the Man in Black's motivation? You know nothing about him. And same thing with the gunslinger. You get like a 1 second scene with him and his father from like when he was a kid that they clearly shot many, many months afterwards, because the original cut of Dark Tower is 2.5 hours. The movie you see in the theater is 90 minutes.
Wow.
And like, it's so confusing. And if they had just fully embraced either the Western side or the fantasy side, I think there's enough in there, and the performances are adequate enough that they could have really made an interesting film that would have tackled some issues that could have real life implications. But it was just a poorly directed film.
I think, despite the gunslinger sci-fi theme, I probably would have paid double to go see it in theaters just on Idris Elba and Matthew McConaughey's kind of fame alone. But then as soon as I saw in the trailer that it was kind of a follow this youngster on this adventure as your kind of doorway into
never-ending story mode. Yeah,
yeah. I was just waiting for the gunslinger to get on a Treyu or whatever.
Yeah, get on Falcor and just take offline. Yeah, and there are a lot of people. We actually have a lot of listeners that were really pumped for this movie. They all read the books. They're big Stephen King fans, and just reading on Twitter, just everyone's like sort of disappointment. I was sad for them that it wasn't going to live up to their expectations, but I did not have a horse in this race, and I was interested is even being too kind and generous. So
yeah, I mean, it's got to be soul crushing because this has been in development for 10 years, you know, it's going to be a movie and then a TV show, then a movie and a TV show. And Even right now, it's planned to be a movie and a TV show. That TV show is never going to happen. They're going to shit-can that faster than you can say Matthew McConaughey.
Matthew McConaughey.
And, maybe not that fast. But this is on par of our impending dread of The Last Jedi and Luke Skywalker's portrayal. You know, I think there are people who really, really love the Dark Tower series, and I have to imagine we're just devastated with this film.
Too bad.
Yeah.
And there were some big names that have been trying to make this movie. You know, you said 10 years, and there have been a lot of different directors that have been trying to do this. I know J.J. Abrams, Ron Howard, and then who ended up making it when it was all said and done?
Yeah, Nikolai Petikovsky.
Arcel or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoever ended up doing it. I mean, it's pretty nuts when J.J. Abrams or Ron Howard can't get it off the ground. Seems bizarre.
Yeah, Abrams and Lindelof spent months trying to crack it, you know, even during like the Lost days, and they just couldn't do it, and so they had to move on. And then Ron Howard came on board, and he couldn't crack it, and it just became this property and development hell forever. Mm-hmm. And it's sad.
And it's sad. I know, I was going to say that too. Oh, that's rad. Anywho, speaking of sad, Nick Fury, motherfucking Samuel L. Jackson, is again absent in a Marvel movie, and that, of course, is Avengers: Infinity War. That seems a little weird to me, and I didn't realize until tonight that he wasn't going to be in Black Panther either. He's the one that brought the Avengers together, for crying out loud. Isn't it a little absurd not to include him in this movie?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it'd be one thing if he didn't want to do it. Like, I can understand, like, hey, dude, I've been in 1,000 of these Marvel movies. You know, I'd really rather only, you know, not really be involved anymore. But it seems like he really wants to do it. And Marvel's like, yeah, we're, you know, this is the biggest, you know, you brought this Avengers together. This is the culmination of that Avengers. You know, after Avengers 4, it's going to be a whole new ballgame. You know, maybe let him be part of these two films.
Right. But he was in an interview with Yahoo. He says, I wasn't in a superhero argument movie, meaning Civil War. I'm not in Avengers 3 and 4. They're shooting them now, and they haven't called me yet. They wouldn't let me go to the Black Pantherville, so it's kind of like, how are you going to make a Black Marvel movie and not let Nick Fury show up in it? Again, absurd. He is such a badass, and it's really a shame that he's not being included. And really, he was just kind of all talk for most of the movies until Winter Soldier, when he was in the SUV and he was being attacked from all sides, and he got out of that. That was my I had like heart palpitations during that scene. I was I was concerned, and I was worried this was going to be the end of Nick Fury, and it made me really really sad. And I was pretty pumped about that movie. Winter Soldier is one of my favorites of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I do think that Nick Fury had a lot to do with that.
That was a lot of fun watching Robert Redford and Nick Fury go back and forth and the kind of power moves they made. But I can't imagine Nick Fury could have any bigger role than he did in Winter Soldier, where the focus was so much more on him and his, you know, is he dead? Is he not dead? And I can't imagine he would have as big as an impact on the scale of the players involved on Infinity Wars.
Well, while that is true, I think that comic books and comic book movies in general have shown that heroes come in all shapes and sizes, and they could have found something for him to do.
Well, plus, I mean, they're touting this as, like, every Marvel superhero is going to be in this movie.
Right, super cameos.
But you. Yeah, like, yeah, I mean, like small characters are going to be in it. I mean, like Mantis from Guardians of the Galaxy, and you know, a couple of people from Black Panther that are like Black Panther's like assistants and stuff like that. I'm sure Pepper Potts is going to be in it. To not have Nick Fury just seems weird.
Yeah, like Black Panther's personal groomers are going to be in the movie.
Yeah, the royal is clean type stuff.
Yeah. That is bizarre. Disney's making some interesting choices these days. Another of which is pulling out of Netflix. This is a big deal. David, you wrote a very nice article on geeklegacy.com about it, and I'd like for you to go into a little bit more detail on how Disney is fucking the Netflix subscriber over in the grand scheme of things.
Well, so you remember it was like probably like 18 months ago. It was shortly after The Force Awakens came out. Disney signed an exclusive deal with Netflix that they were going to send all of their properties over to Netflix, starting with the Star Wars stuff, starting with Rogue One. Rogue One went to Netflix relatively soon afterwards. All the Marvel movies go there. All the Pixar movies go there. All the Disney movies go there. And it was a fruitful and seemingly happy relationship. Problem is in recent years, more and more people have been cutting the cord with cable, and Disney relies on cable revenue to subsidize, you know, Disney programming, be it ABC, ESPN, the Disney Channel, Disney XD, so on and so forth. And with those revenues declining, that's why you're seeing so many more networks embracing, you know, paid services. CBS is doing it. You know, when 10 to 15 years ago, shows like ER were getting like 41 million people watching it, and so they were charging advertisers a fortune, and they were making so much money. Right now, I mean, take like The Big Bang Theory is usually the highest ranking show, that or NCIS, and they'll get roughly like 14 million. I mean, so we're talking like a third the audience, so the revenue stream has to be decreasing. They're having to find alternative revenue streams, hence all of these pay-for apps, you know. You got your Netflix, you got your Hulu, you got your HBO Nows, now you've got CBS All Access, you're going to have now the Disney one, and this is just kind of all stemmed from people cutting the cord. And in the long run, they did an analysis, and like when I know everyone says, oh, well, I save a bunch of money. A lot of people aren't really saving much money with cutting the cord, especially now that you're going to have to get a Disney paid channel, because Disney owns Marvel, Star Wars, Pixar, Disney. They own the Muppets. If you got kids, they own all of those, all that programming, the princesses. I mean, it's going to be almost a must-have. Mm-hmm. I mean, assuming they don't price people up at making like $20, if they come out and say they're, if they price it like the same model that they price like the CBS All Access at, you know, at $7, I think it's almost a no-brainer. And if they can get millions of people to subscribe for $7 a month, you know, they're going to recoup that income that they were used to be getting from the cable providers. And in addition, they still have that revenue from the cable companies. Hopefully they'll go the Netflix route and start to produce more original programming. Obviously, I'm a big Star Wars guy, and I would love to see either live action or varied animated properties. I want to see them get out of that in-between episode 3 and 4 range that they seem Disney seems to be really stuck in. You know, we got Rogue One, Han Solo, we got Rebels, most of the novels and stuff. Everything's taking place in this like 19-year span. And I want to think it's because they're waiting for Last Jedi to come out, because we're going to get a lot of revelations about, you know, Ben Solo, the Jedi Order, and stuff like that. And then once The Last Jedi comes out, it'll open up that gap between Return of the Jedi and The Force Awakens. But yeah, so I guess cutting the cord is starting to bite people in the ass, and they just found a different way to get money from you guys.
Do you think ESPN's portion of Disney is going to go that route as well?
Yeah, so so
cable.
I think they're still going to be, all their stuff will still be on cable. You know, the Disney Channel will still be there, Disney XD, ESPN. But yeah, I'm sure that they'll move their ESPN films, like their 30 for 30 stuff, which is probably the best programming on ESPN, to be honest. I can say that because my Giants are so hopelessly out of the playoff race that I don't even watch SportsCenter anymore because it depresses me. But I could see them moving the 30 for 30 over to this app. And I mean, that's incredible programming.
Okay, so here's the thing. If let's just net right now, Netflix is $12 a month. It's gone up. It's now $12 a month. But they can charge $12 a month because they have such amazing original programming and Disney. When Disney pulls out, what is Netflix's argument for keeping the price at $12 a month? Because they're obviously not going to go down. They're not going to. They're just going to say, "Oh yeah, we have this awesome original programming," and that'd be the end of it. Do you think that that's right?
Absolutely. I mean, Netflix has put billions of dollars into the original programming. Netflix is going to lose $1.2 billion this year, and they have no problem doing that. Next year they'll lose 1.5. Eventually they'll get to the point where they're going to be losing $2 million a year. And it's all because they're putting so much money into original programming. I mean, there used to be the time when it was like House of Cards, Orange is the New Black, and like one or two stand-ups. Now there's just so much original content, and they're producing dramas, comedies, everything in between, to where by the time this comes out, because Disney is under contract with Netflix on some films through, like, you know, 2019, 2020. Mm-hmm. So they'll fulfill their obligations going forward, and so the Disney movies aren't going to be disappearing off of Netflix anytime soon. They'll be there for probably in 2 years, you know, some of them. Rogue One just hit there, and so that'll be there for a couple years, to where I don't see Disney launching their new thing for several months, and there'll be an overlap period to where they'll be on both for a while.
Mm-hmm. What do you see is going to happen with this new streaming service and the strategy with how they're going to do any theatrical releases? Like, will Disney still do, obviously, theatrical releases? But I've heard kind of conflicting strategies between Netflix and Amazon on how Amazon wants to put everything in theatrical release first, and Netflix is obviously not as motivated to do that for all their original movies.
Yeah, I think that Disney will stick with the Amazon model of, you know, like Manchester and the Sea and stuff like that, to where they'll still do theatrical releases, and then they'll come to the streaming service. It'll be interesting because the Disney properties are one of the few properties, you know, with Star Wars, Marvel, and Disney, Pixar, that actually has a home video market. You know, Netflix basically killed the home video market as far as like DVDs and Blu-rays goes. But the Disney properties are one of the few that actually still sell retail copies.
And you got to buy it now before it goes in the vault.
It goes in the vault.
Jesus Christ.
So, I mean, they really do. Everything you said is very, very keen, Will. It's they have their real tightrope, and I'm sure there'll be some serious experimenting in the coming months about, you know, home video release schedules versus streaming release schedules versus theatrical release schedules.
Yeah.
I'm hoping this all of this just means we'll get more original programming from Disney. That's that's my hope.
Best case.
Yeah, we'll get more, you know, I mean, just think, I mean, we have all these Marvel shows on Netflix. I mean, those are all, those, who knows how long those are going to go, you know, your Daredevils, your Defenders, your Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. That's all up in the air right now. Will that move to Disney? Will that stay on Netflix and just kind of run its course over the next year or so? Will they create different programming, different original programming to compete with that within the Marvel universe? Will it connect? You know, will we get our Star Wars films? Can we have more animated features? You know, like those old straight to DVD ones. I think in the end, this is good. I think it will lead to more original programming, but it's hard to tell.
I don't have any kids of my own yet, but my sister has 6 kids that she reps, and I imagine like the possibility of having Disney-related movies straight to the home and not have to worry about getting them all to the theater would be huge for so many parents that are huge Disney fans.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Disney programming. So easy. Yeah, Disney programming is safe. I mean, if you just let your kids loose on Netflix, who knows what they're going to find? They might find 13 reasons why, and then they're like, "Mom, what's suicide?"
Yeah, that Beaver movie that you tried to make me watch, or I forget what it was called. Zombie
Nymphomaniac?
I don't know.
Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving, that's it, with the turkey.
Oh, it's the best.
That rapes, ever. The raping turkey?
The raping turkey, yeah. Gobble, gobble, motherfucker. it's definitely worth watching. But yeah, you can set them in front of the Disney app. I mean, knowing that the worst they're going to do is stumble across a PG-13 rated Marvel film.
Sure. I remember my afternoons when I got home from school was just filled with the Disney Channel. And I was just watching cartoons, and it was the greatest, like, 2 hours of my life when I was a child. And I miss it.
Yeah.
Don't say you don't still do that.
I mean, I might watch cartoons, but they're not the Disney cartoons.
You're not watching the new DuckTales with Dave Tennant?
I'm not.
I didn't even know it was on until I heard someone talking about it today.
Yeah.
My brother actually just narrowly missed out on being Launchpad.
Oh, that would have been cool.
So we have to hate the show, is what you're saying?
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, don't watch boycott. That shit. Watch the original. Yep. Hashtag boycott DuckTales.
And Launchpad, he went on to do Darkwing Duck.
Yep.
That was a spinoff of DuckTales. Interesting.
Let's get dangerous.
Let's not.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to get dangerous.
All right. Don't.
This is a safe show.
Keep it in your pants, man.
Oh, man. Where are we at here? MoviePass. This is the thing. I had no idea. I feel like you may have told me about this once before, but it was a bit pricey, and I wasn't into it. I was like, I'm not going to pay that. What are you, nuts? It's my hard-earned monies. But now you're telling me that for $10, I can see a billion movies, and that is it. It's $10.
One a day.
For 10 days?
Well, you can watch one film a day every day of the month.
Okay, and then the next month I buy another pass.
Nope. So it's a subscription service like Netflix. You pay
$10. Right. That's what I mean. I can pay $10 a month. So
correct,
what if the month is February and there aren't as many days? I feel like I'm getting gypped a little bit.
Yep, you're missing out on 2/3 days depending on the leap year status.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a thing. $10. You can see it doesn't include IMAX, doesn't include 3D. You can see one movie a day, and it's $10 for the entire month. As of this moment, it works at 91% of movie theaters across the country, from your big chains to your small independent films or independent theaters. The only like chain that really doesn't take it is Arclight, because they're considered like a premium movie theater. AMC is currently fighting it, but I don't know. You know, I'm sure they have some form of contract with them. And yeah, it's available now for $10, MoviePass.com. The downsides are you can't book your tickets online. It's you can book your tickets through the app, but you have to be within 100 yards of the theater. So no pre-booking. It kind of hinders the ability to book as a group, even if you multiple people have the app. The app isn't really conducive for multiple tickets. But I mean, if you both have the app, you can do it within a couple seconds to reserve your seats. And like I said, it doesn't work on IMAX or 3D. But for regular tickets, you could go catch a 11 o'clock showing tonight. You just show your little app dealio, and you're in.
You don't get to wear like a sweet wristband or have a lanyard and flash your shit like it's a backstage pass.
I'm sure you could make one if you wanted.
Wear your phone around your neck and just kind of show it off. Interesting. Do they print out a ticket stub for you, or do they just scan it and give you dirty looks and let you walk in?
Well, I mean, there's the thing of it is that MoviePass is going to pay the theater full price for that ticket. So if you go to a movie that costs $13, MoviePass is paying that theater $13. So the chain isn't losing out on any money. What the chain's... The AMC has a robust app called, if you're a Stubbs member, Justin's favorite. If you're a Stubbs member, they give you like rewards and benefits to use their app. And of course, they put advertisements in front of you and X, Y, and Z. So they make money off their app. So if you're using a third-party app, they're making less money. And I think that's the only reason they're fighting it, is because they're losing money through the app. As far as ticket prices, they're making the exact same amount of money.
How does MoviePass make their money?
Yeah, I can't believe there's not a requirement to buy a ton of popcorn and drinks every time you go to the theater every day.
I mean, they're going with the Netflix-Amazon model. I mean, Amazon lost billions of dollars for years just building up to where they became Amazon. You know, you don't even shop most other places, you know. And Netflix is still losing money, but, you know, they are the standard of streaming is Netflix. You know, everyone compares everyone else to Netflix. And so MoviePass is trying to get there. And I'm sure if this takes off gangbusters, you know, a year from now, it's going to be $12 a month. And people will be like, well, that's still, if I go to two movies, I make it. And then, you know, creep up to like $13. And now you get those people that if you only go once a month, they're actually not utilizing the service and you're making money off of them. And to where I could see a scenario to where eventually this gets to like a $20 price point, which for someone like me is great because I would easily see enough movies to make it worth my while. You know, someone like my in-laws, they may get it thinking they would, and then, you know, after a couple months, they don't use it as much. And so
it's just for suckers.
That's right. It's a Ponzi scheme.
I believe it.
I'm making my money off this for sure, because I'm going to a movie a week, at least.
You can go a day. Don't even go to work
if you
anymore.
Go a day, just go to the movie. You're never going to see me again.
Don't even see the whole thing. Like, it's on your lunch break. I'm going to go check out like a half hour of Avatar 2. Nice. That's the way to do it. That's the power move.
All right, what else we got? Are we done? Oh, no, almost done. Fucking, speaking of AMC being the assholes that are the ones that are spitting back in the MoviePass face, they have another problem, and it is a lawsuit with Mr. Robert Kirkman, who was basically the creator of the Walking Dead comic book, and we'll call him a producer on the show, AMC's hit TV show, The Walking Dead, and now he is mad at them. And while he's still working for them, he's slapping a big old fat lawsuit saying, "Hey, you owe me more monies." Mr. Frank Darabont was also one of the guys that slapped AMC with the lawsuit. That was last year. He had been talking about it forever. He got kicked off the show after the second season. He was the showrunner for it. And he'd been angry with AMC ever since. And everyone else was just like, "Oh, you're crazy. Fuck off," that sort of thing. But now it turns out all the other producers on the show are drinking the Darabont Kool-Aid. And they, too, feel shortchanged. And AMC, they're accusing AMC of lousy business practices, and ultimately shortchanging them out of several millions of dollars. Is this going to hurt the show?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all big fans. We've all seen every episode and know it all by heart, right? That's where we're at with the show. I think I'm the only one that still watches it. And I would not be offended if it ended today. If AMC just said, "Fuck MoviePass, fuck Robert Kirkman, and fuck Frank Darabont, we're done with you guys," and just ended the show, I would probably give him a high five for that.
It's just news to me that it was even still on.
Yeah, just give him a big old fat attaboy. They should just pull out and be done with it. Say, "Now you're getting no money. How about that?"
I think that'd be funny.
I'd laugh.
I mean, Like we talked about earlier, that AMC is the only the first big show they ever owned was The Walking Dead. They didn't own Breaking Bad. They didn't own Mad Men or anything like that. And so this is kind of like their first time having a bona fide monster hit on their hands. And, you know, it's very prevalent in Hollywood that you mask costs and you inflate costs. There was a very famous piece in Entertainment Weekly many years ago where they took the movie Ransom, which grossed, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of like $401 million worldwide, and showed the Hollywood math proving that it lost money. And so it was a big to-do because Ron Howard, who was the director on the film, claimed that he was owed royalties. And they're like, no, here's our books. Look, we lost like $110 million. And obviously everyone knew that was impossible, and it kind of brought this scam up to light, but it hasn't made the practice any less prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
Got your goddamn unions.
Yeah, you know I'm not a pro-union guy. They do own, you mentioned Breaking Bad. It looks like they do own Better Call Saul.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Which that is pretty sense. Good. Halt and Catch Fire.
Another one I'd be surprised to hear it's still on.
Oh, really? I like it a lot. Humans, Fear of the Walking Dead, Dave's favorite. Into the Badlands, Preacher, The Sun, and Loaded. The Sun and Loaded are 2017 series.
Hmm.
They're expanding.
Not a lot of monster hits you listed. You got a lot of okay shows.
Watched two of these shows. I watched Better Call Saul and The Walking Dead. And I take that back. I watched Better Call Saul when it's on Netflix. So season 3 just ended, and I was really tempted to buy season 3 on Amazon and then just watch it, you know, each night after it airs or whatever. But I did not pull the trigger. But I do that with The Walking Dead. I own all the seasons on Amazon, and I just watch them the next day after they come out. I'm a sucker.
So you're coming a mile away.
Yeah. Idiot.
So David, you're saying this practice is pretty rampant of the pricing on episodes? And
yeah, I mean, it's kind of like one of Hollywood's dirty little secrets, you know, alongside like the casting couch and things like that. It's... You know, it's a business. They're beholden to their shareholders. They need to maximize their profit. And so, you know, that you start to get a lot of studio heads getting producer credits on films. You know, like Tom Rothman, who's the head of Sony, you know, is probably the single worst decision maker in the history of films. You know, he passed on Deadpool twice. You know, he's responsible for all three terrible Fantastic Four movies and whatnot. He gets executive producer credits on all of these. So, you know, he draws a salary from that. But since he's a studio head, his income is not, it's not public knowledge because it falls under like protection and all of this stuff. So they could just give him, they could say they're paying him, you know, $200 million. Like, oh yeah, it's such a great idea. We're going to pay him like $200 million. And, you know, they can bury a bunch of money that way, or they can overinflate costs. You know, it's easy. You know, there's above-the-line costs and below-the-line costs. You know, above-the-line costs being, like, talent and things like that. But once you get below the line, you start getting, like, transportation, crafty, you know, catering, things like that. It's easy to manipulate that because it's not so scrutinized. You know, everyone knows Jennifer Lawrence made $11 million on this film. They don't know that, you know, they may be charging, like, there's, like, 9 crafties when there's really only one.
Wow.
And it's just something you accept. And with the exception, you know, most cases, you know, as someone who's worked on several jobs on a film set, usually you're the beneficiary to that because every so often things come to light and they're like, oh, we actually got to pay these guys that much money and stuff like that. So,
do you think that
it's a fun business?
That process plagued the Game of Thrones last two seasons more than the content material lacking. Of just all the costs related to each episode rising so quickly, and who wants money out of each episode.
Yeah, I mean, Game of Thrones is HBO's a little bit different because they're not, they don't rely on advertiser revenue. And so because of that, I think they get to like hide their stuff. And they're kind of like in the power position there as opposed to like, you know, other studios like NAMC who has to like draft in Robert Kirkman to create this thing, to where their relationship with George R. R. Martin is significantly different than Kirkman's relationship with AMC, in that since HBO has it's easy to predict the income an HBO comes in. And so HBO can say, like, hey, since we don't have advertisers, this is how much money we can pay you, you know, to where on a show like AMC, they can see how much money they're taking in from advertisers. And so the accounting practice is a little more transparent for AMC than it is for HBO.
Wow, it's really enlightening. Did not know about that stuff.
It's a scary world out there. It's dangerous to go alone.
So that couch that you guys invited me on earlier to get on this podcast wasn't legit?
No.
Yeah, one day
it's more of a trailer. It's more of a trailer than a couch.
You have to ask Justin about his casting days and Tehachapi and all that.
Oh, yeah. Bit of a legend in the casting world.
The man, the myth, Tehachapi.
And I assure you, there's nothing of a sexual nature in this story.
Poor girl probably quit acting.
Yeah, that's too bad. It was an under the breath comment.
It was not under the breath. In your head, it was.
That was overheard. No big deal. It's one of those things where it doesn't kill you, makes you stronger. We'll chalk it up to life lessons. I was extremely polite, Dave.
Were you?
I think so. I was.
I don't believe that for a second.
I was finding a common ground for the two of us, and it worked.
Well, we'll break this tie. All right, so we're casting for our first feature, and Justin's one of the producers on the film, so he was sitting on the casting, and he was reading lines opposite the actresses who came in for one of the parts. And so when, you know, the casting call, usually they'll come in and you'll chit-chat for a couple seconds because almost all of them are talented, but you almost want to get like a feel of like the chemistry of how you interact with each other. And since we were doing a comedy, we wanted to see like how they responded to like random questions to see if, you know, they had any kind of improv or personality.
You got the right guy for the job then.
And so I'm chatting with this very nice lady, and she's like, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, yeah, I'm from like the desert area. I'm like, hey, Justin's from over there, too. So where are you from? And she's like, from Tehachapi. And Justin's like, huh. And like, as loud as can be.
And what? Like, and then, I was like, ha! This is really what it was like.
Yeah. And then this girl's like, oh, have you been? He's like, yeah, I have.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah. I drove through with my paw once.
And so now this poor girl has to, like, read her lines opposite Justin.
Oh my gosh.
She didn't get the part.
Needless to say.
That's too bad. She probably wouldn't have taken
despite it. Despite her solid upbringing in Tehachapi.
Yeah. Jack Palance lived in the Tehachapis, you know.
Her upbringing in Tehachapi did not prepare her for interaction with Justin.
Yeah, that's true. And it was a holiday weekend, too, so she probably missed out on some holiday festivities to be a part of that, so I feel bad. If there was a way to contact her, I would be more than happy to apologize. It's only been, what, 12 years? 13 years?
I'm sure I got her headshot around here somewhere. I got to start throwing stuff away.
Anywho, is there anything else? Normally we would have a list, but Randy Van Dyke is in charge of that, so we don't have one. Anybody have anything else? Final thoughts?
I'm a little sad. Whenever I'm not here, you're like, oh, fucking David's not here. I don't hear any grief going Randy's way. It's because you love him more?
Well, I've seen him naked, if that helps.
Does help.
If I may, perhaps if I've seen you naked, I would love you more, too.
It's not as much the humorous sight as Randy is.
Yeah. No way, dude. I miss you very much. And in fact, part of me being so mean all the time is just how I deal with grief. And sadness.
Coping mechanism.
Yes, exactly. So
I like it.
My way of being sad when you're not there is lashing out and making fun of you.
Oh. Well, I feel special. Now I feel special. I feel right? Pretty, actually.
We have sort of an Edward Cullen and Bella relationship. It's very abusive. Will, thank you very much for joining us. You have been an absolute delight.
It was a pleasure on my end. I hope you guys will have me back sometime.
Yes.
Yeah, Randy who?
Yeah. You can be the new list guy. Got to come with a list if you want to get on the show.
All right, I'll get on that.
But it's got to be a weird list. Like, what was Randy's top 10 movies Nicolas Cage could have been in?
And it got down to where it was just like movies that he was barely even alive. They were coming out. It was stupid.
Right, like the first one was fine. It was like Superman. He was cast as Superman. And then it was like Titanic. And we're like, oh, he was offered a role in Titanic? No. I'm just saying, he could have been it. And I'm like, what list is this?
Yeah, that was a good one. Anywho, David, anything? Final thoughts?
Nope. It was great. I really enjoyed having you, Will. You'll have to come on every week.
Ooh.
Fantastic.
Do it.
Make this threesome a foursome.
Yeah.
So I'll take off our shirts. Shirts and skins. Everyone's skins.
Anywho, thank you for listening to another fun episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Remember to visit geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. Whilst you're there, check out the Pixelated Podcast. That is where Steven and I talk about the week's highlights in video games. It's a lot of fun. I'm usually half asleep, but eventually I come around, and it's a good show. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, at Geek Legacy, and at Pixelated Pod. Will, thanks again for joining us, and everyone else, have a fabulous week.
Bye.